Welcome to the Beacon Broadcast from Beacon Baptist Church in Burlington, North Carolina, featuring expositional Bible teaching by Pastor Greg Barkman. If you'd like to correspond with the Beacon Broadcast, or if you wish to support this radio ministry, write to the Beacon Broadcast, Post Office Box 159, Alamance, North Carolina, 27201, or find us on the web at beaconbaptist.com. BeaconBaptist.com. The Beacon Broadcast is supported in part by the gifts of faithful listeners. Now, with today's message from God's Word, here is Greg Barkman.
Amazing grace.
We will continue our study of 1 Corinthians chapter 14, moving out of the first section, which is verses 1 through 5, into the second section, constituting verses 6 through 12. Remember, in 1 Corinthians, there are three chapters devoted to the subject of spiritual gifts, namely chapters 12, 13, and 14. Chapter 12 deals with all the spiritual gifts, a variety of them, and deals with that subject in a rather general way. Chapter 13 narrows the focus down to the issue of love, and that's the great love chapter in the Bible. And it tells us that none of the spiritual gifts are of any value apart from the exercise of love. Love is superior to all of the spiritual gifts. Moving from the subject of love in chapter 13 into chapter 14, we go back to the subject of spiritual gifts, though I probably shouldn't say it that way because chapter 13 on love was also about spiritual gifts. But nevertheless, we move back to the subject of spiritual gifts. But here, the focus is entirely upon one gift, namely tongues. Which is not to say that it's the only gift that is mentioned, because it is held up in contrast with other gifts which are also mentioned. But the whole purpose of chapter 14 is to explain the problems that exercising the gift of tongues often create. And so that's what we're looking at on the Beacon Broadcast on this Friday, April 22. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for helping us financially so that we can continue to teach God's Word on this station. The first five verses of chapter 14 deal with tongues and prophecy, the desirability of prophecy and the weakness of tongues, the strength of prophecy, the superiority of prophecy, and how love is the proper way to exercise tongues. It's the proper way to exercise all of the spiritual gifts, which in many ways is a repeat of what Paul told us in chapter 13. But now moving on to a second major point in this chapter. The first point had to do with tongues and prophecy. The second point has to do with tongues and intelligibility. And Paul begins by giving three helpful illustrations. 1 Corinthians 14:6, "But now, brethren, if I come to you speaking with tongues, what shall I profit you unless I speak to you either by revelation, by knowledge, by prophesying, or by teaching? Even things without life, whether flute or harp, when they make a sound, unless they make a distinction in the sounds, how will it be known what is piped or played? For, verse 8, if the trumpet makes an uncertain sound, who will prepare for battle?" Three helpful illustrations. Number one, Paul's own ministry. Number two, musical instruments. And number three, the military trumpet or bugle. Back to verse 6, Paul's ministry. But now, brethren, if I come to you speaking with tongues, what shall I profit you unless I speak to you either by revelation, by knowledge, by prophesying, or by teaching? Paul says, if I come to you in tongues, what would be the purpose of that? Clearly, it would be of no benefit to them. He's already made it clear that there's no benefit in tongues unless the people who hear the tongues understand the tongues, which doesn't happen very often because tongues, by definition, are a foreign language, foreign to the speaker, foreign to the people who are hearing it. Now, as used on the day of Pentecost in Acts chapter 2, there were people there who could understand the tongues that were spoken by the early church, the 120 members who gathered together in the upper room, who were the speakers of tongues, though they themselves had not studied the languages, did not use those languages in their lives, and therefore presumably did not understand even what it was they were speaking, but there were people there who did. And they said, we are hearing in our own language the wonderful works of God. But Paul says, if I come to you at the church in Corinth and I speak to you in who knows what, Persian, what will that benefit? You don't understand that. But now, brethren, if I come to you speaking with tongues, what shall I profit you? Answer, nothing, zero. Because the value of ministry depends completely upon intelligibility, upon being able to understand what is said. If what is being said is not understandable, if it is not clear, then the ministry is of no value. If I come to you speaking with tongues, what shall I profit you unless I speak to you either by revelation, knowledge, prophesying, or by teaching? Unless I come to you talking your language and speaking revelation, prophecy, we've already covered that. That's divine revelation given to a prophet who communicates it to others in their own language. Now, if I do that, that'll profit you. If I teach you the meaning of God's word, that will profit you, as long as I'm doing it in the language that you understand. But if I speak to you in tongues, what does that accomplish except possibly to impress people who are impressed by the gift of tongues? And clearly there were some people in Corinth who were, even as there are people in our day who are. Wow, listen to that. Wow, isn't that spectacular? Wow. Listen to that person speak in tongues. What are they saying? I don't know, but I sure am impressed. Well, la-di-da, that shows immaturity, doesn't it? It certainly does. But now, brethren, if I come to you speaking with tongues, what shall I profit you unless I speak to you either by revelation or by knowledge, by prophesying, or by teaching? That's illustration number one out of Paul's ministry. I can't minister to you helpfully unless I come to you speaking in the language you understand. Illustration number two, musical instruments. Even things without life. By the way, before we go on to verse 7 and musical instruments, let's understand from what Paul said in verse 6 that corporate worship is not to express personal worship. There are some references here to tongue speakers benefiting themselves, speaking unto God. All right? We'll accept that as a valid use of tongues because the Bible indicates that here, at least a valid use in Paul's day in the first century. But that's not in public worship. That is in, we might call it, private devotions. Public worship or corporate worship is not the time to express personal worship. It is a time of corporate worship. And what is communicated needs to be beneficial to the body, to everybody who's there. So that's illustration number one, out of the ministry of the Apostle Paul. Illustration number two, musical instruments, verse 7. Even things without life, whether flute or harp, when they make a sound, unless they make a distinction in the sound, how will it be known what is piped or played? Things without life. The first illustration was of Paul and his ministry. Paul has life. He's a living human being. But even things without life, and he makes it clear what he's talking about here, musical instruments, like a flute or a harp, any musical instrument, doesn't really matter which ones, but again, verse 7, even things without life, whether flute or harp, when they make a sound, unless they make a distinction in the sounds, how will it be known what is piped or played? To just play random notes that don't communicate anything is of no value. At the best, it's sloppy. You're doing something that's unfamiliar, but it's no benefit to others. Like a 2-year-old who gets up on the piano bench and begins to bang on the piano keys. Now, some people might consider that to be cute. Isn't that cute? They're going to become a great pianist someday. Maybe. We'll see. We hope so. That would be wonderful. But for right now, what they are doing is of no value. In fact, it's actually of negative value. It is a distraction. It is an irritation. Now, when that child gets a little bit older and is able to play a simple melody, that child at age, who knows what, 5 or 6, sits down at the piano bench and plays dun 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 dun. Now, most of you will recognize that tune as Mary Had a Little Lamb, because the notes are distinct, they are clear, they're not random, they're not just banging, they're not just noise, but they are communicating something familiar, something understandable. In that case, the instrument has a beneficial purpose. Even things without life, whether flute or harp, whether they make a sound, unless they make a distinction in the sounds, how will it be known what is piped or played? Bang, ring, bang doesn't communicate anything. But dun 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 dun, that does. That was Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, if you're wondering. So musical instruments are of value when and only when they play something that communicates. This is one reason why I try to caution our musicians when they're playing prelude music or something of that nature, when the congregation is not singing, to play familiar hymns that people will understand. They may play a beautiful hymn that they know, and maybe a handful of people know, but if most of the people don't know what it is, then it doesn't minister to their hearts. They can say, that's nice, that's pretty, but that doesn't communicate anything. But when they play something familiar, dun, 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 and that brings to people's minds the words to Amazing Grace, that communicates beneficially. Until next week, good day. May God give you His eternal peace.